The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the Earth.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belden.
Welcome, good afternoon, everyone. It is Wednesday, February 10th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, coming to you live and direct from beautiful Potland, Oregon. It's not a typo, it's a way of life, where it's currently about 50 degrees, sunny, and completely dry for a very, very rare winter day here in Portland, Oregon. And joining us across the state in Astoria in our virtual studio, my good friend and half-half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Hi, Russ. Can you hear me?
We can hear you just fine. And
excellent.
Once again, our hearts go out to the folks on the eastern seaboard who are socked in with armpit-deep snow, I hear.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, a lot.
But I want to say, just 90 miles away from you, it is pouring rain, gray, and cold here. So even over here, it's not that great.
Oh, it must be just me. I've got a special circle of protection. So for all our friends out there in the chat room who are socked in, welcome to Normal Show Live. We'll keep you company here for the next 60 minutes. We got quite a show for you, starting off with our hemp headlines. Carrie, what are we looking forward to today in the news?
Well, today we're going to do a little segment about the cannabis colleges in California. I always like to talk about those. We're going to go down under for a true hemp headline, and we have another story surfacing surrounding the Juarez shootings, and we're going to talk a little bit about that.
Oh, boy, that's going to be quite a topic for today's show. Thanks, Carrie. We'll get back to you right after the break. Today we've got our segment on cannabis science featuring Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Mitch had a personal engagement for today, so he can't join us live, but yesterday I recorded with him a new interview. This regards some new information, some new studies on marijuana users and lung function. You'll want to hear about this one, and more studies on marijuana and the potential for schizophrenia or psychosis, and some pretty amazing statistics that Dr. Mitch brings us from those studies. Also, today is our Irie Wednesday in our daily Toker Tunes. We'll be playing some great reggae style music for you. Actually, this is a little more ska today, but it's a little bit the same, so we hope you really enjoy it. And at the end of the show, we're going to get into a cannabis conversation on my subject for the day, which is called Boycott the Brick. We're going to talk about Mexican brick weed, the Mexican drug war, and a little bit more about what Cannabis Carrie was talking about there from the violence in Juarez, Mexico. You know, a lot of folks here in America don't realize the price of Mexican brick weed isn't as cheap as you think it is. We're going to detail exactly what goes into bringing that substandard marijuana into the United States and why we so desperately need to legalize marijuana for all adult users in the United States so that our home growers can put those violent gangs out of business. That's what we're all about here at Normal Show Live. Check out our blog at stash.normal.org. You can follow me on Twitter at Radical Russ on Twitter, and our email address here is stash@normal.org. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, Cannabis Carrie with the news.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford. from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
When I was in England, I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale, and never tried it again.
I think you'd probably be a lot cooler if you had, Mr. President.
I said, hey, do you have a joint cancer? Would be a lot cooler if you did. Lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Oh, lie to don't hide it.
Lie to don't hide it.
Just lie to don't hide it. Fire up.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The nation's largest paper, USA Today, ran a story yesterday about the phenomena of cannabis colleges in California. Oaksterdam University now has 3 large campuses in 3 different cities, and they have aspirations to move into other states that recognize legalized medical marijuana. The new cannabis industry is estimated to be worth as much as $2 billion. About 7,000 students have taken classes at Oaksterdam University campuses, and 850 students are currently enrolled in this semester's classes. There is also a waiting list of students eager to enroll in classes scheduled for next semester. Students can learn about law and science when it comes to cannabis, how to lobby local government leaders, how to grow safely, and how to package, produce, and market the finished product. The range of students attending the schools is breaking stereotypes of typical stoners, with former police officers in a recent class, holistic healers, business owners, retirees looking for a new, more relaxed second career, and a PhD candidate studying the emerging legal cannabis market as a basis for his doctoral thesis.
Hmm.
On a recent weekend, 55 students in L.A. paid $250 each to take a 2-day course titled Marijuana 101 that instructed them on recent court decisions, how to work in a dispensary, and which variety of cannabis are best for various ailments. Richard Lee, who started Oaksterdam University in 2007 in Oakland, is reporting that students are coming from all over the country, from states with medical marijuana laws and states without them. Other states who have legal medical cannabis are now looking to the Oaksterdam model to start their own cannabis college campuses. Michigan, who has had medical marijuana on the books for less than a year, recently saw their first such school open a few months ago. Russ?
Oh, wow. This is quite amazing. When people are in a recession and desperate for jobs, that they might want the chance to learn how to grow cannabis well.
Surprise!
Yeah, it's no surprise that these cannabis colleges are sprouting up, if you'll pardon the pun. People want to know the real information about cannabis, and it has been so hidden from the people for so long. Only in the era of the internet have we really experienced this modern bonanza here in marijuana information and legalization and support for reform. I definitely think that the increase in public support for legalization is directly tied to the rise of the internet and people's ability to anonymously and independently corroborate the information they get from the government or to debunk the information they get from the government. Now, for years, things like Jorge Cervantes' marijuana horticulture have been selling, you know, like crazy, but to get those kind of books usually meant you had to go into some sort of head shop or bookstore where you might be afraid of people seeing you go in there. Or if you were to order it and have it mailed to you, you worried about what sort of list your name just ended up on. The internet provides that sort of flexibility and an anonymity that the people need to get the information they want. Now, we're seeing these colleges in California and Colorado. We've got a few that have opened up here in Oregon that have started up. Oregon Normal's going to start one at their location. We have people that are signing up for classes in New Jersey that are starting up, as well as the Michigan classes that you mentioned as well, Carrie. So this is something that is going to continue. And as long as this economy stays so poor, people can't help but be attracted to the can of businesses.
We're going to go down under for this next True Hemp headline. A couple in Australia are working overtime to educate their country about the value of hemp. According to the Sydney Morning Herald, the pair have become the first Australians to own and grow a licensed industrial hemp crop, and they are recording the whole experience in order to teach others about the versatile plant. Hemp has been listed in Australia as a noxious weed since 1938 after importing hysteria about the evils of cannabis from the Western Hemisphere. Richard and Wendy Fryer are in a campaign to champion the idea that hemp is a plant with just too many uses to ignore. The couple was given special permission by the Department of Primary Industries to grow a pilot education project on a property they own in the northern beaches of Australia. Mr. Fryer points out that hemp was used in about 25,000 products in the 1990s, and he believes it is used in over 35,000 different products today. From oils to building fibers and medicinal uses, the Fryers say the potential of the plant must be made clear to challenge the petroleum-based industries. The couple, both in their 60s, have also applied to the country's Food Standard Agency to sell hemp seeds for food. The seeds of the hemp plant contain over 20% protein and are high in omega-3 fatty acids. Seems like the whole world is at a tipping point, Russ.
Hey, this is great, man.
It is great. I'm glad they're able to grow some hemp down there. I love the idea that the Australian government has qualified hemp as a noxious weed. I wonder what other noxious weeds that are really noxious weeds that they haven't categorized that way. I mean, I wish somebody would declare the crabgrass in my lawn a noxious weed and send some Australian police to dig it up for me. That would be nice. But, you know, they're absolutely correct about the uses of hemp, and not just the modern uses of hemp. You know, people, they point out the 25,000 products that were made in the 90s out of hemp. But really, we've been using hemp for 5,000 years. There's no reason that we have to focus on the modern uses. We can focus on the other uses as well that have been known by humanity for thousands and thousands of years. Everybody knows about hemp rope, but you can also make hemp soap. You can make plastics out of hemp. If you sow an acre of trees to get paper, you can get four times the amount of paper if you sow an acre of hemp. And that acre of hemp can be rotated multiple times per year, unlike an acre of trees can. Plus, the hemp that's being planted uses very, very low pesticides, little amounts of water, and is actually good for the soil because hemp has such a deep taproot. It goes so deep and it helps to solidify the soil. When we talk about places that have been ravaged by wildfires, as Australia suffered through in their summer season, wildfire areas often suffer from soil erosion, from all of the plants being burned down and mudslides and terrible disasters of that sort. Hemp can help in those situations too. Hemp will grow just about anywhere. It loves to grow in a place that's been recently ravaged by fire, and it helps to hold together the soil to avoid those sorts of landslides that we're talking about. Hemp fibers are the longest and strongest fiber of the plant kingdom. When you get a fiber off of a plant, when you make a board or a press board or any sort of textile out of that, the strength of it is determined by the length of the fibers. When you look at the fiber of like a Douglas fir tree, it's about an inch and a half long at best. And so if you make press board out of Douglas fir, it's pretty strong. Hemp fibers are as long as the hemp plant, as tall as that plant gets. If it's a 10-foot hemp plant, the fibers are 10 foot long, and that provides extreme tensile strength when we start putting together textiles and boards and press boards out of hemp. They say a hemp a press board is as strong as steel, but as light as wood. I could spend the entire show giving you all sorts of information about hemp and all of its uses, but just remember that hemp is being banned because it's in the family of marijuana, the family of cannabis. So hemp can never really be free until we legalize cannabis for all people. Let me explain why. The hemp that's being grown right now is grown under what's called a test pledge under the Hemp Industries Association, which says they will not certify industrial hemp unless it's less than 0.3% THC by volume. Okay? Now, less than 0.3% THC, of course, is never going to get you high. And, of course, industrial hemp isn't meant to get you high. You never could get high off of it. But at 0.3%, they figure that there's no way anyone using or ingesting a hemp product could possibly fail a urine screen. Like if you're eating a hemp seed bagel or you've got hemp seed flour that you're using in muffins or whatever. So they make it at 0.3% THC so you won't fail the tests. Well, the problem is, at 0.3% THC, the hemp plants don't grow as strongly as they could if their THC percentage could be in the 1 to 2 or 3% range, as it would naturally occur. So we are purposely making substandard hemp because marijuana is illegal. And so then our opponents will come back and say, oh, well, hemp doesn't produce that much and it doesn't produce so well. Right, if you produce it at 0.3% THC. If marijuana were legal, all hemp would be legal, and we would be able to solve so many of our problems with respect to energy and textiles and food and so much more. It's time we just legalize marijuana.
And in yet another story surfacing surrounding the atrocious shootings in Juarez, Mexico, that ended in 16 people, mostly high-achieving teenagers, dead and dozens more wounded. City officials in the neighboring American city of El Paso, Texas, voted on a resolution Tuesday to formally condemn the violence. The city council heard more than 2 hours of testimony about the resolution written by City Representative Beto O'Rourke and Steve Ortega. The resolution called for a presidential summit on the drug war and for the U.S. government to make it one of its top foreign policy priorities. It also included asylum opportunities for individuals and families who are threatened and fear for their lives in Juarez. The most discussed portion of the resolution was a paragraph about supporting legalized marijuana, the one substance that supplies 60% of the violent drug gang's revenue. According to O'Rourke, cutting off a significant source of its revenue could prevent the drug gangs from continuing to kill and terrorize with impunity. Some people spoke out condemning the language of the resolution, and some voiced their support for legalizing cannabis in the U.S. One person who spoke in favor of legalizing marijuana to combat drug violence was Richard Newton, a retired pilot who worked for the Customs and Border Protection for over 20 years. He says the bottom line is the reason you have the cartels fighting each other is to sell drugs to the United States. Now, Newton is a member of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. O'Rourke and Ortega's original resolution that included the paragraph on marijuana legalization was defeated by a 5-4 vote, with Mayor John Cook breaking the tie. And in the end, the council dropped the paragraph about supporting legalizing efforts and passed the watered-down version of the original resolution with a vote of 6-2.
Yeah, and a lot of the reason why Councilman O'Rourke there in El Paso was unable to get this passed had to do with direct pressure from the federal government. Originally, when this came out, Beto O'Rourke put this resolution out in El Paso calling for a look at decriminalization or legalization as a way to combat this terrible violence that's happening in Mexico. And it passed originally 8-0. It was an 8-0 vote on the city council for this. Then the U.S. representative, the congressman there, and Sylvester Reyes, I believe is his name, down there in Texas representing El Paso, relayed the message back from Washington, D.C., that if the city council were to do such an embarrassing maneuver by voting for legalization, that federal funding that would be making its way to El Paso for various things like highway projects and other sorts of physical plant sort of operations would not be coming from Washington, that there would be serious problems in getting federal money. So we've got our federal government blackmailing our cities to keep quiet about legalization because it embarrasses them. And that was enough to get four of those councilmen to switch their votes, making it a 4-4 tie vote, which then allowed the mayor to break the tie and make it a 5-4 decision to take out the marijuana legalization paragraph. That's what we're up against here, people. The outright effective censorship of our voice by our federal government and by our large corporations in the media that don't want to hear about legalization because they know if we're talking about it, we're winning. We got to take a break. It's just about time for that special break time, especially for those of you out there on the East Coast who are all socked in, got a little cabin fever. I know what will do the trick for you. We're right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Law420.com.
Hello, I'm Russ Belville, Outreach Coordinator for Normal. In my job, I read literally hundreds of headlines each month involving nonviolent, productive citizens whose lives are ripped apart by a marijuana or drug arrest. Many citizens could avoid arrest by refusing police searches and remaining silent, but police are well-trained to confuse and intimidate. That's why you have a right to speak to an attorney before answering any police questions. I hope you never need to exercise that right, but if you do, make your first call to the law offices of John C. Lucy IV. John Lucy is an accomplished criminal defense attorney with expertise in Oregon's medical marijuana law. John Lucy understands and respects cannabis and drug consumers of all backgrounds. Call John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit in downtown Portland. Address available at law420.com. That's John C. Lucy IV at 503-227-6000 or visit law420.com today.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Our marijuana laws are terribly unfair, and they make criminals out of law-abiding citizens. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges, and we are unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They are average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. And it's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we get tunes for Irie Wednesday, our celebration of that mellow vibe we find in the best of reggae, ska, calypso, and Latin music. Brought to you by Johnny Reeferseed and the High Rollers, America's favorite red-eyed soul rock and roll band, available now on iTunes and CD Baby. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes. Welcome back, every 23 after the hour, and normally at this time we'd be talking to Johnny Reeferseed in Iowa, but I don't know where Johnny might be. Reverend Green is in the chat room, but I haven't received any word from Johnny or any new tunes in the Dropbox, so I'm just going to have to go back to the archives for this one. Not exactly a reggae tune, but kind of fits along the ska vein. Great tune that we've played a few times on Normal Show Live. I just love it. It's a group called Echo Movement, and the song is I Think God Smokes Weed.
I think God smokes weed, and he was high when he made me. I can feel it in my DNA. I think God smokes weed, and he was high when he made me. And I think he gave up.
Oh.
understand. God was making a mess of the man he planned. In the face of defeat, he smoked a helping hand and said, I'll just put him in a reggae band. I feel it in the beat when I'm on the stand. I feel it in my feet when I'm on the sand. I see it in the sunsets that might expand into your mind so you understand.
I think God smokes weed and he was high. Memory, they made me feel a fool through humility. They said that God's infallible consistently, except for the one time he dropped that seed. I hear that God's in you and me and all we see, assuming all the actions of my own body. If that's the way it is, then you must agree. Every time we rock the gun, so does he. I think God's most sweet, and he was high.
That's Echo Movement with God Smokes Weed. This song and many others in our Daily Toker Tunes can be picked up at our website, stash.normal.org. Look in the main menu under Media, and then look for Toker Tunes. If the artist has given us permission to let you download it, it's there for download. Also, when the show is not on, we feature an hour of random Daily Toker Tunes every other hour from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time here at live.normal.org. You can get the full set list of every song we play, all the titles, all the artists, available online at stash.normal.org. Look in the main menu under FAQ and then look for music credits. Now, before we go to the bottom of the hour here, I wanted to bring up a article that was sent to me by email from a reader. This came from Police Magazine. I got the photocopy here. Police Magazine, dated June of 2009, and the lead headline there is Grass. Is this drug war lost? Is it still worth fighting? So this is the magazine for police officers. And a few things I wanted to bring out from this magazine article. They did a poll of readers of Police Magazine. They sent an email out to 16,600 police readers and got 1,775 responses, which is a response rate of about 11%. Real good response rate for an email campaign. Plus or minus 2.2% margin of error on the following questions. If you don't, and this is asking police officers, right? First of all, should marijuana be legalized? And according to the police, 77% of them say that marijuana should not be legalized. Now, compare that to the most recent polls, Gallup polls and I can't remember the name of the other poll that have registered marijuana support for 46 to 53%. Angus Reid poll, 53% support for marijuana legalization. So the cops are way behind the people on this one. But then they asked him, if you don't agree with marijuana being decriminalized for the public, do you agree with the legalization of medical marijuana? Now, in answering this question, police officers said 45% of them said no, they don't agree with legalizing medical marijuana, which means that 55% of them do agree with legalization of medical marijuana. However, when they break that down, it was only 6.5% that said yes, they just agree with medical marijuana, whereas 48% of them said yes, but with stricter regulations. Now, compared to the bills that just passed in New Jersey, I don't know how much more strict we can get. The reasons that they give, that police give, according to this police magazine survey from June 2009, the reasons that police officers give for not wanting to legalize marijuana, and they could select more than one answer, the number one answer that police officers gave for why they didn't want to legalize marijuana was that it's a gateway drug. 80.8% of police officers, that means 4 out of 5 cops, think marijuana is a gateway drug. They think that if you smoke pot, you're going to move on to coke, meth, heroin, something really bad. 79.6, another 4 out of 5 cops believe that we shouldn't legalize marijuana because of the danger of people driving while high. Because, you know, if we legalized marijuana, suddenly people would be driving high. Because nobody's smoking pot now and driving, right? Uh-huh. Okay. And the third biggest reason they gave, 70%, so 3 out of 10, believe they should not legalize marijuana. Cops believe they should not legalize marijuana because of the harm to users and to society from pot smokers. So we got our jobs cut out for us, people. We've got a lot of police officers to educate, and we'll be here every day at Normal Show Live helping to do that. We got to take a break. We'll be right back with some cannabis science.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancers, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects of medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reactions, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairment, appetite increase, and in 37 states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana. It's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
It's time for Normal Show Live's Cannabis Science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York in Albany. Now, open wide and say, here's your dose of cannabis science.
All right, it's time for our regular dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, but we're not live today. We are talking to Dr. Mitch yesterday through the magic of pre-recording. So unless you have a time machine to send your text messages back 24 hours, we can't answer your live questions. But we'll be back live very soon. Dr. Mitch, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Russ.
We're going to take this opportunity today to, instead of answering the live questions, to go in depth on a couple of studies here that you brought up. And the first one has to do with airways and lung function for cannabis users. Tell folks about the latest research.
So this is a curious study that came out of that crew from New Zealand. And it's neat to see that they've been following up this same large sample of folks, over 1,000 of them, and having them basically come into the lab and blow into those giant measures of lung function that we've all seen at the doctor's office, where you essentially just take the deepest breath you can and blow it out as fast as you can, and if it doesn't give you a head rush so bad that you pass out, you get to do it 2 more times, and they take your best measure of how much air is in your lungs and how fast you can blow it out. What a surprise. The folks who smoke tobacco really do badly at this and seem to get worse over time. Folks who don't smoke anything, of course, stay pretty steady and show modest declines over years and years and years. The folks who smoked cannabis and only cannabis are also not really showing any impairments and actually had slightly larger lung volumes than the other folks, which kind of freaked these authors out a little bit. so the whole idea that cannabis is going to cause outrageous airway obstruction is clearly not happening. Also, this week my student Nicholas sent me the final draft on our vaporizer paper, and just wanted to say that in only a month, folks who were having respiratory symptoms, who came to the lab, got a vaporizer, and then came back and did their lung function measures, showed modest but, you know, genuine statistically significant improvements on how much air is actually in their lungs, and they also reported fewer things like coughs and wheezing and tightness in the chest and things like that. So my vaporizer soapbox continues, and I'm just happy to report both of these studies. Really.
You know, I've heard that anecdotally from many people who've been lifelong cannabis smokers, Madeline Martinez being one, who switch over to using vaporizers almost exclusively, and they do find a much better reaction, a much better lung function. I wanted to ask you about what you'd mentioned in the study about the lung function and how much volume of air. You mentioned how the cannabis-only smokers had a bigger volume of air they were able to expel, and that kind of freaked out the researchers. Any theories as to why cannabis smokers might have a bigger volume? I mean, does holding the hits, practice make perfect, something like that?
It's cute. They use the word hyperinflation, and I hate to recommend holding hits because it really doesn't get you that much higher than just holding your breath with no cannabis in your lungs. James Zachney had some data on this in the 90s. I mean, in truth, the whole hit holding, although it feels like you're getting so much higher, you might as well just blow out the smoke and just hold air for a while. But nevertheless, that practice may be contributing to this hyperinflation of the lungs that they're finding in this study. The other drawback of holding hits like that is, of course, then there's more opportunity for tars and respiratory irritants to adhere to the lung. So again, if you take a nice hit off your vaporizer and the THC will be absorbed pretty rapidly and blow it right out, everything should be just fine.
How rapid is that absorption? Within a couple of seconds or so?
Literally, I mean, James, those data, he had them hold for 10 seconds. In truth, in three, it looks like it's completely possible for THC to cross that barrier and end up in the bloodstream.
All right, so no need to hold the big hits for a long, long time. 3 seconds sounds like it'll do just fine. This data that you're getting out of these studies, particularly this study on lung function, we've seen other studies. We've mentioned them before. We've covered Dr. Tashkin's work and so on. Is there anything new to this study that we didn't learn from previous studies of cannabis users and lung function?
Well, this is the first one to actually report that the cannabis users had more of a lung capacity than the other folks. And I think that that's why they're wording things so gently, shall we say. And, you know, Tashkin's data are really focusing more on respiratory symptoms and things like that. So I'm not sure if this is going to replicate. It is only one study, and if it were working against us, I would, of course, use that as a critique. I don't think, you know, holding hits is a way to get improved lung function. By all means, your aerobic exercise is the way to go. But clearly, with a sample this large, if there was something awry with smoking cannabis and cannabis alone, they would have detected it.
Did the study look into folks that were smoking both tobacco and cannabis?
And guess what? They're really bad off. I mean, it's this odd synergistic thing. I thought they would show some of the protective stuff that we've talked about before with Tashkin's data and Don Abrams, but at least with lung function, it's just not happening that way.
Okay, time to quit those blunts, I suppose. This is something else, you know, with regard to your second study you mentioned with the vaporizers and seeing improvement in lung function. And you mentioned your vaporizer soapbox, and we're always promoting the use of vaporizers as probably the most healthy way to ingest cannabis vapor or THC molecules. But people use lots of other methods, pipes, bongs, and joints. And we've covered it on the show before, but for our new listeners, I was wondering if you could break down the relative safety or effectiveness or health hazards of these different methods of ingestion.
What has been funny about this, and Dale of California Normal, Dale Derringer, has shown some of these data, is the good old joint actually has a pretty impressive ratio of THC. And I just wanted to, you know, point that out. The key issue with that is often that the problem of the heat And so this, I've got to, get it all the way down to the very last little bit is probably maladaptive. Go ahead and continue using that joint and then just take that cannabis out and use it in the subsequent one rather than literally burning your lungs under those kinds of circumstances with those little baby roaches. Those horrid drug war death toys, those little metal things that heat up so bad and have the fire so close to your face when you're lighting them, unfortunately are pretty bad as far as lung heat is concerned and not particularly good as a ratio of THC and irritants. The blessed water pipe, much as we all loved it so much back in the day, actually ends up trapping some of the THC and doesn't provide as good a ratio of THC to irritants as you might expect. And then unfortunately that cooled smoke, although it's easier on the lungs, tends to get people to think, oh, now I'm going to hold the giant lung buster hit forever, which is, of course, an opportunity for irritants to adhere to the lung more and doesn't actually, at least according to Zachney's data, get you all that much higher. So it's probably not the great idea we once thought it was.
Now, you mentioned the heat of the gases coming into the lungs as being an irritant to the lungs, and how smoking the joint all the way down to the roach is kind of maladaptive because of that heat. So then, does the length of a pipe make a difference, or perhaps when we talk about vaporization, a difference between those kind of homemade heat gun type vaporizations versus a higher end device like a volcano where the vapors are going to cool in a bag? Can that make a huge difference?
The beauty of the volcano is, of course, that your heating element is completely separate from the inhalation of the vapor, and so you don't have that at all, and that's a big, big plus. Even some of the other styles that have that long plastic whip tend to do better because that mist tends to cool, but in fact the vaporizer doesn't heat up anywhere near as high as a flame, so it's not the same level of issue. Obviously, longer pipes have the opportunity for the smoke to cool, and so as funny as it sounds, those old crazy six-foot things that you see in pictures from India and stuff where somebody else actually has to light it may be this curious step toward harm reduction by letting the smoke cool through a longer tube.
Very interesting. Well, let's take a look away from physical health and into mental health here with another study that you've brought up to our attention. And, of course, this is something that gets a lot of coverage in the United Kingdom, where the British tabloids are always warning against the dangers of skunk and how it'll turn the entire British population crazy. What is the latest now on cannabis and schizophrenia?
Well, the cool thing about this paper is it's Zammit's group. It's that crew over there in the UK who have published some of the data suggesting increased risk of psychotic symptoms in folks who are heavily involved with cannabis early in life. And even they are pointing out that they didn't mean for this to turn into some kind of crazy rationale for prohibition. And they walk through the numbers in order to show how many people would actually have to stop smoking cannabis to just get rid of one person with a schizophrenia diagnosis. And it's cute because they give these, big confidence intervals and these estimates. But basically, you'd have to essentially stop 2,800 heavy cannabis users from ever smoking cannabis in order to save the UK from one, literally one, schizophrenic. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And when you start looking at the upper end of the estimates, it's like tens of thousands of people. So the whole idea that, the UK should change its laws and make cannabis possession a harsherly penalized offense based on this notion is absolutely absurd. And I was delighted to see these guys come out with this.
It's an interesting way of putting the risk assessment that you'd really have to stop 2,800 heavy cannabis users to prevent one case of schizophrenia. Can you think of any other examples where researchers have gone out of their way like this to make this kind of risk assessment ratio for any other type of drug or therapy?
Way back in the day when we had really dangerous things like thalidomide used by pregnant women creating children born with malformed feet and hands. I remember seeing some data on that kind of thing, but it's usually markedly smaller numbers. It's something that's really impressive, like, oh my gosh, we just need to have a few people not do this and things will get so much better. So to see it turned on its ear like this is a real rarity, and again, a real credit to these authors. The notion that cannabis causes full-blown schizophrenia just doesn't have the magnitude of support that we've been led to believe in the media. And, I mean, as we've said time and again, if, you know, you're got a schizophrenic identical twin, by all means, don't use cannabis. And other than that, I don't think that this is the justified alarm that it ought to be.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned thalidomide, doctor, and let's not forget the FDA approved thalidomide, but won't approve cannabis at this point.
It's odd but true. We can trust you to handle a drug that might make a pregnant woman have a malformed fetus, but God forbid you'd have a plant in your house.
Oh, my. Well, Dr. Mitch Earlywine joins us every Wednesday for our dose of cannabis science, and we always appreciate you coming in here. Folks, since we didn't get to get any live questions today, I want to remind you that if you do have questions for Dr. Earlywine and you'd like him to bring it up on the show, that you can email him directly at 420research@gmail.com. And a lot of those emails generate the topics for our discussions every Wednesday. Thanks, Dr. Earlywine, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back after a word from these 420 friendly sponsors. Wait a minute. This is internet radio. There are no dials here.
It's tough talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org.
It's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
Roll a big fatty.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Cannabis Conversations.
Welcome back, everyone. It's 48 after the hour, and today I want to take this chance to have a conversation about the Mexican drug war. Cannabis Carry reported on it earlier in the hour. Most recently, that terrible massacre in Juarez, Mexico, just across the border from El Paso, Texas. And this has been highlighted in a recent post from Der Spiegel. This is the German newspaper, and they have an article entitled The Failed War on Drugs in Latin America. Could decriminalization be the answer? So we're talking about Mexico and all of Latin America here. And in describing the massacre, they tell how the killers in Juarez arrived in 4 or 5 SUVs and completely blocked off the road to a working class neighborhood where 60 students were attending a birthday party. So imagine that. Imagine that you're just going about your day's business, you know, working or taking care of the kids or whatever. And these big SUVs start blocking off the streets to your neighborhood. You don't know if they're coming for you. You don't know what's happening. But you're just terrified in your own neighborhood. Something out of a movie where you'd see those big, menacing, black window-tinted
SUVs taking over a neighborhood. The intruders went into the party here armed with automatic weapons and opened fire on the revelers. 16 people died in the hail of bullets 2 weekends ago. They were mostly adolescents between the ages of 15 and 19, and it marked the bloodiest weekend of the year to date in Juarez, Mexico. This is not just happening in Juarez, though. Also, 7 bodies were found in the southwestern city of Iguala. The victims suffocated when the murderers wrapped their mouths and noses in strapping tape. In Quiroga, in southwestern Mexico, the police chief, and 2 officers were shot, while several plastic bags containing body parts were found in nearby Zitácuaro. Now, I want to talk about this Mexican drug war, and as I do so, I'm going to place some images up on the web screen. And I want to warn everyone right now that if you don't like images of violence and death and dismemberment and beheadings, you need to turn the cam off right now. Because if we're going to talk about this, we're going to talk about what's going on in Mexico. I don't want to hide behind euphemisms. I don't want to hide behind words of type. I want you to see what is really going on south of the border in this drug war. Because this is what's happening because marijuana is illegal in America. Funerals every day of mothers and fathers that are grieving over their killed children, over their brothers and sisters, over their husbands and wives. Beheaded bodies being brought out onto the streets. People coming, going, getting up to go to work, and right out there in the street, a bunch of bodies piled up. Police officers, federal officials, soldiers. Right now, Mexico's drug war is becoming more and more brutal. President Felipe Calderon has deployed 45,000 soldiers and federal police in the government's fight against the drug mafia. 5,000 of those soldiers patrolling Juarez alone. Now, despite these stepped-up efforts, in December of 2006, the average of 2 people per day died in Juarez, Mexico. By 2008, it has gone up to 5 people per day in Juarez, Mexico. And last year, the murder rate in Juarez, Mexico was up to 7 people per day. Since 2007, more than 15,000 people have died in Mexico's drug wars. In 2009, Mexico also became the second largest marijuana producer in the world, as many of these poor small farmers are switching from corn and beans to producing cannabis. This is to feed the American appetite for marijuana, since we're not allowed to grow our own. Already, many high-ranking officials in Latin American governments have called for an end to this criminalization of marijuana. Former Brazilian President Fernando Henrique Cardoso, former Mexican President Ernesto Zedillo, and former Colombian President Cesar Gaviria now say they support the controlled decriminalization of narcotics. In Mexico, Congress repealed a law last year that had criminalized the possession of small amounts of narcotics. In Argentina, the country's highest court has paved the way for decriminalization of drug use. And in Brazil, where the possession of narcotics for personal use is permitted, they have fashioned a cross-party alliance to support proposed legislation that would define permitted amounts of narcotics. That's because these Latin American leaders are seeing pictures like this, except they're not pictures where they live. This is their daily lives. These are the streets of Mexico, with all of these funerals going on week after week, day after day, of 7 people per day dying over Mexican brickweed. Now, I've mentioned before that I have a personal policy called Boycott the Brick, and that is I will not participate, I will not be a part of the economy that supports these killings, these beheadings, these tortures. But I got to admit that I've got a luxury here. You know, I live in Oregon. I live in a place where there's plenty of homegrown marijuana available. So I'm not saying this is the answer for everyone. And I'm not blaming American consumers of Mexican brickweed. You know, if you're stuck in, you know, Mississippi or Oklahoma or someplace where there's not a lot of homegrown, you don't have a lot of choices. On the other hand, you got to think, how much do you really need to get high? How much are you willing to pay? How much are you willing to be a part of the killings and the violence that is taking place in Mexico? Here's my solution to that.
because I know not everybody's going to boycott Mexican brickweed. I know my people. I know how you are. And again, I'm not making a moral distinction on you. You know, that's your choice you need to make. But I would suggest that if you're going to continue to support the Mexican cartels by buying Mexican brickweed, I would suggest that you take some of the money that you're saving, because we all know the Mexican brickweed's incredibly cheap compared to good homegrown. Take some of that money you're saving and donate it to a drug policy organization like Normal. Donate it to us. Donate it to somebody that's working to fight to end this prohibition. You know, I know people that get, you know, an ounce of Mexican brick for like $150. You know, it's really, really cheap. Whereas an ounce of good homegrown might cost $300, $400. So if you're going to pay $150 for the brick, throw $50 Normal's way. Throw $20 Normal's way. $10 our way would be fantastic. This is a very critical time in drug law reform. And, of course, a lot of this has to do with some of the scandals that have been taking place in other drug law reform organizations. I don't want to get too deep into it, but some of you have followed the story of the Marijuana Policy Project and their executive director, Rob Campia, taking a 3-month leave of absence due to inter-office sex scandals going on here. The most recent news I wanted to update you on is that MPP has canceled their annual fundraiser at the Playboy Mansion because of this. And they point out how because their top fundraisers, their two of their top fundraisers, are not working with the organization for the next 3 weeks, this could cause some serious declines in the money that MPP raises. And the money that MPP raises goes to a lot of the other organizations through their grants program, including Students for Sensible Drug Policy, including Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and including SAFER, the Safer Alternatives for Enjoyable Recreation, and so many other groups out there that are dependent on MPP grant money. And if that grant money is going to be drying up, then We gotta raise the money other ways. We've gotta raise it from the stakeholders. We can't depend on philanthropist billionaires anymore to get marijuana legalized for us. It's up to us. And there are 22 million American people who will smoke marijuana this year. 14.5 million American people who will smoke marijuana this month. 3.5 million Americans who will smoke at least twice a week, and an estimated 1 million of us who are daily tokers. If we could raise a dollar from every marijuana smoker, from every person who is going to smoke marijuana this month, we would have $14.5 million. But again, a lot of people don't want to get involved in marijuana legalization. They're afraid. They don't want to get on a list. Oh, I don't want to be on a list. They don't want to get involved. They think that they can't do anything about it. They think it's hopeless. Oh, it's always going to be illegal. They'll always keep it illegal. They. Always pointing the blame towards someone else instead of their own ass sitting on the couch, smoking a joint, smoking a bong, and not doing anything for their own freedom, for fighting for their own liberty. This country was not founded by weak people. This was founded by people who had principles and who believed strongly in freedom. And that's what this issue is in marijuana law reform. It is an issue of personal freedom. It is an issue of civil rights. And bringing it back to Mexico, it's an issue of life and death. There is no reason a single Mexican has to die to provide marijuana to American consumers. I've said it before, I'll say it again. We are happy to grow our own. We will be glad to put the Mexican cartels out of business. Now, this brings me back to that police article where the police officers were opining on why we should legalize or why we shouldn't legalize it. And according to these police readers, 65% of them think it's worth their time to bust marijuana users, and 68% of them think that legalizing marijuana would not help to reduce the violence from the cartels. And I don't think that if we legalize marijuana, these cartel guys are going to become Boy Scouts or anything like that. But at least they'll become violent, murderous thugs with a whole lot less money to work with. With a whole lot less power to be able to bribe officials and buy firearms and to pay off informants and so on. Legalization is the only rational answer, and it's about time we got started on it, folks. We'll be here every day helping you do it, helping you to get more information to spread around the growing truth about cannabis to your friends and family. Tell them all about us, live.normal.org, Monday through Fridays, every weekday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. Catch up with the rest of our posts at stash.normal.org. We've got more information, links, and all of the studies that we talk about on this show. and follow us on Twitter at Radical Russ. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Take it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.